Start recording and I'll just start singing and you will delete this because I never want to sing on
podcasts. Oh, you think so? Do you?
Hello, welcome to Way Too Seriously, the podcast where we talk about kids' movies and take them way too seriously.
Uh-huh.
I'm Paul Moffat.
I'm Jan Moffat.
And this week we watched and we'll be talking about the 1991 movie Hook.
Hook. So, can you do a little synopsis of it?
Sure. The premise of Hook is that Peter Pan has grown up, he has forgotten that he used to be Peter Pan, and his old nemesis Hook kidnaps his children to bring him back to Neverland to force him into a war. In the process of the movie, he remembers that he was Peter Pan and remembers how to be a child at heart, but still a responsible father. That's basically the story of Hook. Yep. Peter Pan, played by Robin Williams. Hook, played by Dustin Hoffman. We'll talk about some of the other people as we go forward, but that's the basic story.
Hook. I didn't look up. It was directed by Steven Spielberg.
So let's start with highlights. What about this movie was really well done?
I think it's a good story. I think like the story of Peter Pan returning with his kids.
You mean like
is an interesting take on Peter Pan, and there's a reason why it's kind of become a classic. That it's related, it's kind of this relatable story to both parents and kids. And I mean, Robin Williams does a great job. Dustin Hoffman does a great job. There's a lot of good acting in it, including the kids. There's a lot of child actors in this, and they are doing a good job. And I think that's on Steven Spielberg's. Steven Spielberg has a lot of movies where he requires a lot of children, and this is one of them. This is one of them where he does a good job. Please talk. You're not talking.
I'm not talking because I don't want to talk over you. Yeah. If I think about highlights, for me, there's lots of good things, but for me, the two big highlights of this movie are the music. I think John Williams doing...
Is this John Williams?
This is John Williams. And this is one of his more overlooked, I think, when people are listing great John Williams scores. Hook usually isn't one that they think of.
Mm-hmm.
But when you watch Hook, like, this is a very skilled composer at work, and particularly the music for Hook. And my other big highlight for this movie that is connected to Hook is, I think, Dustin Hoffman's performance. I think Robin Williams does a very good job doing the Robin Williams thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's his best performance. I don't think it's in his top 10 best performances. And I don't think he's in my top 10 favorite performers.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But, which isn't to say, like, that I don't like Robin Williams. I like him
plenty. You're saying not top 10 when the, like, are there 10 characters in this movie?
No, I mean, it's not one of his, he's not one of my top 10 performers in the world.
Oh, yes, of course.
I'm saying, if I think of my favorite performers out there, Robin Williams isn't in my top 10. And when I think of my favorite Robin Williams performances, Hook isn't in my top 10. It might be my top 10, it's not in my top 5. But Dustin Hoffman might be in my top 10 favorite performers. He is great in everything he's ever in.
Mm-hmm.
And he is really so good in this. Like, surprisingly good, even if you've seen it before. Mm-hmm. Even if you remember him being good, you watch it again, and he is so good. Like, hilarious and captivating and, like, alternatively menacing and really compelling.
Yeah, absolutely.
I just think he does a great job.
He does.
And then my other, I agree, the child actors, particularly the two kids, the two, Maggie and Jack.
The little girl, Maggie, like, all of her lines are delivered, they're a little bit, they remind me of Emma Watson in Harry Potter, in early Harry Potter, where, like, she just, like, is clearly being directed to, like, just say your line now, and, like, takes a deep breath and says the line, but the way she says them is so adorable, and every single one of her lines was so familiar to my brain. Like, I could say them along with her. They're just like those things that stick with you of like, he needs a mommy, and daddy, mommy could do it.
Reach. Come on, daddy, mommy could do it.
There was, she was very adorable.
Yeah, I don't think that she stands out for being, like, a fantastically compelling as an actor.
No.
But I think as a personality, she was so adorable is the word.
Yeah.
But, like, everything she does, you're just like, I think I might cry. Yeah, she's exactly. So adorable.
Yeah, exactly.
I think she's great.
Yeah.
And Jack, the boy, is, you know, famously, I can't remember the actor's name, but he's that famously child actor who didn't go off and become horrible. He was in like 5 movies and was great in all of them and then stopped being an actor.
Yeah, apparently he's a lawyer now. I looked it up.
Yeah.
Just like,
what about?
I'm always happy when that happens to child actors, that when they don't go into drugs and sadness.
I think of him as like the male Mara Wilson.
Yeah, I can kind of see that.
So what about lowlights? What are the...
Wait, but there's one more highlight, and that's
okay,
Rufio.
Rufio!
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 Oh! Hey!
That is so dangerous.
Oh, Rufio.
Rufio is great. And I mean, Donnie...
Brasco?
It's not Brasco, because that's the movie.
Donnie Brasco.
Donnie Brasco is the movie starring Donnie. It's like Donnie Basco. Anyway, yeah. He is... Dante. It's not Donnie. It's Dante Basco.
Dante Basco.
Dante Basco is Rufio, and he is in my favorite, and I think your favorite too, TV show in the world, Avatar The Last Airbender. He plays Zuko in that, and so he holds my heart in his hands just because of that other role, but he also was a, you know, he's a teenager in a world of kids, and so when you watch this movie like I did, you know, as a kid and then as a teen, you're like, oh, he's the cool teen.
And I mean, frankly, watching it again now, he really is incredibly cool. And it's partly, you know, they give him cool things to do, but it's partly mm-hmm. just he has enormous charisma, and he
Absolutely.
Just gets on screen, he does a little smirk, and you're like, that is the cool kid for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Precisely. Yeah.
What about lowlights?
Lowlights. Julia Roberts is a great actress, but this is not a good role. She plays Tinkerbell, and... there's been a lot of people to play Tinkerbell throughout the years, and Julia Roberts is probably the worst. And I hate to insult any actor or actress, but there's nothing that she does that's interesting. And I think it's the way she was directed and the way she probably had to do so much of her stuff on a green screen
mm-hmm.
that it was just like her laughing to herself, her role in the plot was very negligible. And then I just did not like the styling of her. Her hair was weird. Her costume was weird. She randomly turned into a big person.
We'll talk
and
about
that's,
that.
Yeah, that's another low light. But I also don't love the ending of Hook. When he gets devoured by the crocodile statue.
He gets ambiguously devoured by a statue.
Yeah,
devoured
exactly.
by a statue. Did I say devoured?
Devoured.
I think I said devoured.
Whatever. Yeah, eaten. He gets eaten. There you go. He gets it by a statue. And like, okay, so I guess he gets eaten by a statue so he doesn't have to be killed, even though they had just killed Rufio.
But they don't want the good guy to kill someone.
They don't want the good guy to kill someone. But then, so a statue, like, it's just so Deus Ex Machina.
Yeah.
And I don't really enjoy that.
I think in general, it sometimes veers too far toward the saccharine.
Mm.
And I was just praising Maggie, the little girl, who is the most saccharine part of it, and I forgive her because she's adorable. But in other places, I like it less. agree the ending is Deus Ex Machina, and the ending in general, not just with Hook, but like they go back and...
Yeah, he's magically different. Peter is all a better father now. And like, oh, really? That's just...
Anyway, that, yeah. There's questions about that. Other than that, most of the lowlights are things that I think we'll want to talk about when we talk about taking this movie too seriously.
Yep.
In terms of the quality of the job that they did, this is a movie that it seems like maybe the most fun set I can imagine.
Yes.
Everyone seems like they're having so much fun. It seems like the food fight scene in this movie is the, you know, platonic ideal of a fun food fight.
Mm-hmm. In fact, that's part of the reason why we watched this movie with our kids, is we're joking around at the dinner table one time, and I, you know, jokingly threw fake food at my kid, and then Paul goes, when are we going to watch Hook? That's the like, scene that everyone remembers, or at least we remember from Hook. When are we going to watch that with our kids? And I was like, well, let's get it this weekend. So I got it from the library, and we watched it tonight.
And it was maybe a little old for our younger daughter.
It was. I often look on a website called Common Sense Media that has really good reviews of kids' movies, just to give you a good sense of what they're like before you show your kids. And this one did rate it as for age 10 plus, and our kids are 8 and 6. But so yeah, I think our younger daughter, she wasn't necessarily scared. She was scared at parts, but mostly she was kind of just have trouble focusing.
Yeah.
And live action things in general, she struggles with because she's into cartoons.
Yeah.
Apart from
the quality of the job that they did, how much did you enjoy this movie? And I'll maybe say, like you, Hook has a place in my heart and I'm nostalgic about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I enjoyed it more than it deserved.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it was good, but I think my enjoyment of it was more than how good it was.
Yeah, I'd say that. I think my watching it tonight, as opposed to the other times I watched it growing up, was less tonight. I didn't feel like I was introducing our kids to like a vital, important movie, and I didn't really feel like they cared a whole lot about it. That kind of dampened my enjoyment of it.
Mm-hmm.
But nostalgically, I do have strong feelings about, like, it was a really fun movie to watch nostalgically, and I remember running around in the woods with my, like, cousins or friends or whatever playing Hook.
Yeah. Did this movie, like, how well did you know the cartoon Peter Pan? Was Hook your introduction to cinematic Peter Pan?
I'm sure I watched the cartoon Peter Pan at some point. I definitely was familiar, like, yeah, I feel like Hook is so part of what I think of as Peter Pan, which is bizarre because it's not supposed to be. But I definitely feel like for me and for others in my generation, our generation, Hook is Peter Pan.
Yeah, it
was a lot of our introduction to Peter Pan.
Mm-hmm. One thing I forgot to mention in terms of lowlights, just one dialogue element, one recurring thing that has always driven me crazy and did again, which is I hate the way this movie talks about the Pan, as if Pan is like a title.
Mm, yeah.
I have the sword. I'm the Pan now. You are the Pan. I believe you're the Pan. No, not, he's not, it's not Batman.
Wait, how is Batman a...
Batman's a title. You're the Batman.
Yeah, but there's only
Dick
one...
Dick Grayson becomes Batman when Bruce Wayne retires. Spoilers.
For... Yeah, plenty... I mean, yeah, okay. That was a stupid example, but...
There's been more than one Batman.
I know that there's been more.
Because the mantle can be handed on.
I know that the mantle of Batman can be handed on, but of all examples to pick, that was not the best example.
No one's there handing are better on examples. The, no one's handing on the mantle of Superman.
Okay, well,
that's like his name. Peter Pan is more like Superman, also because he can fly.
I wish you could see me rolling my eyes right now. Yes, you're right. The Pan. Pan is like pan flute. He's Peter who plays the pan flute. He's not... Yeah, absolutely. It was... The Pan is a
stupid
thing.
That's a bit of a
thing.
Nitpick, but it...
There's also, in this movie, it's like he's going to fly, he's going to crow, he's going to fight. And, like, those three things are, like, these vital three things to Peter Pan. But I don't remember either in the book or the Disney movie that being a thing.
No.
So that was a bit interesting.
In the book, crowing is a thing, because especially the, not the play, but the book.
Yeah.
Because Barry has this obsession early on in his conception of Peter Pan that Peter Pan is part bird, that all children are part bird, that children used to be birds until they become babies.
Right.
So okay. They're all bird-like.
Mm-hmm.
So it's probably part of where that's coming from. But yeah. It is weird. I remember being a kid and being like, what are they talking about with crowing?
Mm-hmm.
And my brother being like, it's just like bangarang. It doesn't mean anything.
Yeah. Bangarang also, yeah. It's just a thing.
So let's talk about taking this movie a little too seriously.
Okay, let's and move on to way too seriously.
Da, da, da. Was I supposed to chime in?
No.
Okay. So I want to start with one aspect of the way too seriously that I want to give this movie props for. And that is for, in terms of casting, The Lost Boys, and especially Rufio, in terms of race and representation.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly don't think I can think of even one other example ever of a lead character being Asian without that being plot relevant.
Mm-hmm.
Rufio is Asian. There is no reason that he needs to be.
Yeah.
But he is. And it doesn't, like, that's great.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's incredibly sad. I can't think of a single other example.
I'm sure there are some, but not a lot.
And then the Lost Boys in general, like, they're...
Yeah, there's definitely, it's a diverse group of children, and that's really, I think that's really good in terms of representation and representation for children watching this movie.
And we could maybe say, and I think it's fair to say, that sure, you get to have the extras be minorities.
Yeah.
But Rufio is not an extra.
No.
And so there is a little bit of criticism to be thrown at the fact that he's not an extra, but he's a new made-up character. You can't possibly imagine Hook or Peter Pan not being white. And we could, and I think should, say that's, you know, there's problems there. But I think they do deserve some credit, and this movie has some credit in my mind for Rufio. And I remember watching it as a kid and not... like it wasn't an issue or a thing or
didn't
at all.
Think of it.
And that I can imagine if I...
He's Filipino. Yep.
So you can imagine if you're a Filipino and, hey, look, there's a Filipino character who's just on screen and is part of the adventure.
Yep.
And like, how often does that happen?
Never.
Just this one time.
Yep.
So props for that, says me.
Yep. That's good. All of the main actors, though, except for Rufio, who is... a main character, but he, you know, let's not kid ourselves.
He's the
least of the main characters.
Maybe.
Are all white.
Yeah.
And Peter Pan is a very white story. There are references to Indians, and as we all, or hopefully most of us know, the Disney version has some really racist overtones in its portrayal of Aboriginal people.
Overtones.
Like, I don't even... Yeah, that's not even the word. It's blatantly racist.
Yeah.
And
they just sidestep that completely in this movie, which is better than reproducing it, but worse than...
There is mention... Hook does mention killing Indians, and there are... It's just a few times it's mentioned.
Yeah.
But mostly they sidestep it.
But
it's hard to in Peter Pan. It's a major plot point in the book, and so it's hard to get past that because it's frankly a little bit of a racist book.
Little bit.
So
I mean,
that's the thing.
And what I was going to say is they mostly sidestep it, which is better than reproducing it, but is worse than addressing it positively.
Yeah.
Right. So if you're gonna do Peter Pan, you can just pretend that Indians don't exist, which is better than pretending that they're savages who are red because they're blushing, like the Disney movie is, but is worse than, say, I don't know, having Rufio be a First Nations person.
Yeah.
Or exactly. I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway. So that's has some good, it balances, it doesn't balance, but it has two sides of different coins. This metaphor got away from me. I don't even know where I'm going.
Two sides of some different coins, and they're on a scale, and they're like, they're rocking, as you know, and they're heads are the heavier boat. Than tails. And yeah.
Okay. So, portrayal of women. Let's start with Maggie Smith.
Let's start with Maggie Smith.
Maggie Smith is in this movie. Maggie Smith is luminous and wonderful in everything she does. I love her so much.
So let me ask you a question, Jen.
Yes.
How old was Maggie Smith when this movie was made?
See, this movie was made in 1991. So it's now 2017. Maggie Smith, in this movie, in real life, she was 57 years old. She was not yet 60. And she was playing a 90-year-old.
Yeah, but she mentions, there's a line of dialogue specifically that says about something that happened 80 years ago.
Yeah, when she was 10.
When she was 10.
Yeah, so approximately. So anyway, yes, she's about 90 years old. She's not even 60, playing 90. Maggie Smith now is still playing 90.
So she's been playing 90 for 30 years. She's been playing
90 for 30 years. And this is what, and then Dustin Hoffman, when this movie came out, was 54.
Right.
Approximately. You never, with Hollywood, it's always unclear what people's actual ages are because people lie about that. But men generally don't have to. Anyway, so there you go. Dustin Hoffman, not very much younger than, he's in his 50s as well. And he gets to be, he's portrayed as old, especially when his wig comes off, but he gets to be the main character. He gets to be all these action scenes, these sword fighting scenes, all this stuff. And Maggie Smith gets to be a frail old lady because you couldn't have someone that age be anything but an old lady.
So like, can I
address what explicitly that problem is? Is it's saying that women don't have any value when they reach a certain age. When they reach a certain age, they're shipped off to sea. They get to play women. Actresses are completely devoid of their sexuality, devoid of their agency and any sort of vitality at a certain age. And that age is much, extremely younger for women as for men. So Dustin Hoffman is allowed to be vital, and Maggie Smith is not at all. She just has to play an old lady forever. And she knocks it out of the park every time.
We can say she's fantastic at it.
But that doesn't mean that it's okay for them to treat her like that.
And it's because, right, if the primary value of women is to be objects of sexual desire, mm-hmm. then as soon as they're too old to be sexually desirable, quote-unquote, it doesn't matter whether they're 50 or 90.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
Too old to be sexually desirable equals old.
Yeah.
And then that's what's behind all that.
And that's what is wrong with the world, which is what we're talking about when we take things way too seriously.
So is that the only problem with the depiction of women in this movie, Jan?
Not at all. This movie has very few female characters. Peter Pan in general has very few female characters. It's about the lost boys. There are no girls there. It's about the lost boys.
Although I want to talk, I mean, if we're going to talk about Peter Pan, let's put a pin in that because I think it's important for Peter Pan that the main character of Peter Pan is Wendy.
Mm, yes.
But let's come back to that. For now, let's talk about Hook.
Let's talk about Hook.
So does this movie pass the Bechdel test?
Barely. There is one scene where Maggie Smith's character, Wendy, asks her granddaughter, Myra, who's married to Peter Pan, she asks her to get her a cup of tea.
She reminds her to warm up the pot.
She reminds her to warm up the pot when she makes her a cup of tea. That is two named female characters talking to each other about something that is not a man, unless the teapot is male.
We should say That is correct information. Do warm up a teapot before you make a pot of tea.
Oh, yes, definitely. That is the most delicious tea.
But anyway, that's maybe not the point
and
here.
And that is where it passes that test, and that doesn't really, I mean, just barely. Because there are not a lot of female characters. There is Wendy, Moira, her granddaughter, Maggie, her great-granddaughter, and Tinkerbell. None of them really talk to each other very much. Maggie, it's very interesting. Maggie and Jack, the two children. And when I think about this movie from watching it as a kid, I always felt like, well, Jack's just the main character. Jack's the main kid. Yeah. And Maggie is his sister. And Peter Pan is trying to save Jack. And when I watched it this time, it's true, it does focus on both kids. But there is a greater focus on Jack.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a greater focus on Jack as when Peter Pan needs to think of a happy thought, he thinks of Jack being born. He doesn't think of his daughter being born, which is a little odd. He doesn't think of both of his kids, which as a parent, both my kids are my happy thoughts.
And we can maybe say for economy of storytelling that because he thinks of his oldest child.
Yes.
But that's not really an excuse because making the son be the oldest child is a choice that didn't just happen by default.
Yes.
And I noticed a thing that happens often in fiction. Jack cares about and thinks about his father. Maggie is thinking about and caring about her mother.
Mm-hmm.
The male child thinks about the male parent. The female child thinks about the female parent. And maybe we have two daughters, so we haven't tested this out in a vacuum.
Yes.
But it seems to me like our kids actually love both of us.
I assume that they do. They seem to. In the middle of the night, they call me and you go and they don't care. So that's good. Because I get to sleep.
Sometimes they care.
It's not good in that way.
Not a lot of female relevant characters.
Yeah. Plus, Moira, as his wife, gets pretty much the same caring as his kids do. He's like, I want to get back home to my wife and my kids. And he just like...
My wife and kids.
And this is a common thing in movies and in fiction is that like... When a male character has a family, they're all just grouped together as the wife and kids. When I think about the reality of human relationships, it's not... A husband and wife is not equal to my relationship with my kids. This is not a portrayal of two equal people having children. This is a portrayal of subservient...
Of a man having three family members.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And that... It's not a huge thing in this, but it's a small thing that it doesn't seem like he cares that he's not with his wife.
So let's talk about the mermaids.
Oh, yes, the mermaids. That's a brief and bizarre scene.
It's only about 15 seconds of movie time, but Peter Pan accidentally, still denying that he is Pan.
He is Pan.
That he is Peter Pan, gets knocked off the pirate ship and into the water. And while in the water, he's rescued by three mermaids.
Three sexy mermaids.
Three sexy mermaids who come along and put air into his lungs by making out with him.
Mm-hmm.
And it, 15 seconds of screen time, maybe, but that's 14 seconds too long.
Mm-hmm. And it's pure male gaze.
There's male gaze. No point of it. Like, you would accomplish... From a storytelling perspective, you'd accomplish exactly the same thing by cutting that out completely and having a line of dialogue that says, there were mermaids.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And why do you not have that? Because you can have three mermaids wearing seashell bras making out with Robin Williams.
Yeah, exactly.
And that brings us a little bit back to Peter Pan in general and the portrayal of women in general in Peter Pan, that like every female character in Peter Pan is in love with Peter.
Yes.
Even though he's a child. And there's Freudian reasons for that. And we could unpack a lot, but the mermaids here are, Peter is here. Let's make out with him. He's no longer the Freudian reasons have kind of gone away because he isn't this character who represents, youth
mm-hmm.
anymore. but he still is the object of their sexual desire.
Yep, absolutely.
Because he's an male fantasy figure.
Yep.
Now, what about Tinkerbell? She's what the other main female character, and she's the other one who, in all versions of Peter Pan, Tinkerbell is always in love with Peter, or in desire of Peter, or however you want to couch that.
Yeah, definitely has jealousy things with her.
She generally hates Wendy because she desires Peter, and that's all super Freudian. But in this movie, how do we want to understand what is going on with Tinkerbell in this movie?
I still don't understand the scene where she gets big and kisses Peter. It still makes no sense to me whatsoever, and feels like it was just an excuse to have Julia Roberts in a pretty dress kissing Robin Williams.
Yeah, it makes very little sense. And when I watched it this time, I haven't noticed in the past, but this time I did, that Julia Roberts is usually wearing this brown pixie outfit. Why is it brown instead of green? I don't know. No. I'm not going to fixate on it, but I don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, she's usually wearing this brown Tinkerbell costume. And then in one scene, she's wearing this poofy white dress because she's welcome home Peter. And then what I hadn't noticed until this time of watching, she's wearing her brown outfit. She's wearing her white dress. Some stuff happens. She's wearing her brown outfit again. She grows and is wearing her white dress. So yeah. I think that when it was conceived, that growing scene should have been back when she was still wearing the white dress.
Yeah.
So it makes even less sense because she grows and her clothes change. Whereas yes. if you'd put it back a scene ago, she'd still be in the same clothes that she was wearing when she was small. And there would be at least one aspect of it that would be less insane.
Confusing, yeah.
As it stands, it makes no sense. None of that section makes sense. The fact that she's in the dress in the first place, because it's a, while you're in this dress, it's a welcome home party for you, Peter. And suddenly her demeanor has changed and the way she's acting has changed. And it's a lot more like, it reminds me of, not quite up to this level, but it makes me think of that episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer season 2 when she was bad, when she's flirting with Xander and she's like, it's a party, aren't you going to open your present? And it's like, it's a party for you, I'm in a fancy dress for you, Peter.
Yeah.
And like, it comes out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't really make a lot of sense.
And then make even less sense, suddenly she grows.
Yeah.
If there's any logic, internal logic for why she grows, they don't put it on the page.
No.
It was cut out in some draft.
Yeah.
She just suddenly grows for some reason.
Mm-hmm. Basically so she can kiss him.
Yeah.
Because she's feeling stronger feelings as a big person and then wants to kiss him. And then that's when he remembers that he has a wife.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make any sense at all. If anyone is out there listening to this and wants to tell us why they think that scene is in there, I would love to hear it because it makes no sense to me.
Because it really seems like it's exactly like the mermaid scene.
Mm-hmm.
It's so that a beautiful woman can kiss Robin Williams, and that's the entire point of it.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. And it says something about the place of women in this movie.
Yeah, they all exist to center around the male character.
To desire and be desired by Robin Williams.
Yeah. Well, Peter Pan.
Peter Pan. The other big thing in terms of identity politics in this movie is that Hook and Smee are playing as a gay couple.
Hmm. I never noticed that.
And even in interviews, Dustin Hoffman and Bob Hoskins have said, they played them as a, I think, I forget exactly the phrase, but they played them as a couple of old, I think that in the interview they said they played them as a couple of old queens, but anyway.
That's interesting.
There's definitely, it definitely does not take a stretch to see that.
No, definitely not. I can really see that as subtext in this, for sure.
Smee is Hook's assistant, but the way he busies over him, he even at one point gives him a kiss on the cheek. and he like...
They treat each other as equals in a way.
Surprisingly.
Like, surprisingly, considering Smee in other media is not treated as an equal. But in this movie, Hook and Smee are a lot more on equal footing. And Smee is helping him, but not quite in a servant-y way, in a more devoted spousal way. I can see that.
Yeah. So then the question is, do we want to do we want to be happy with that, or do we want to criticize the fact that it has to be left as subtext?
I think it has to be left as subtext because it's not vital to the plot at all, nor is it any relationship, any romantic relationship.
Like if they'd left, if they had left Tinkerbell's love for Peter Pan exactly as subtextual as they left Smee's love for Hook,
that would have been
or Hook's love for Smee, whatever, both ways, that would have been way better.
Way better.
I think I actually really agree with you. I think it's not a problem that this was subtext. I think it is a problem that nothing else was.
Yeah, absolutely.
All the other romantic, all the other sexual and romantic desires or whatever should have been as subtextual as this one.
Absolutely.
And when I watched it this time, I think it's actually, it takes very, very little reading between the lines to see it. It's not like, well, I guess you can see it.
Yeah.
It's like, oh yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I can see that.
Anything
else to say about this movie?
Well, I was going to talk a little bit about the fact that it's important in Peter Pan that the main character is Wendy, because it's all about, because of the Freudian reasons. Do we want to go into that, or is that
We're talking about Hook, not Peter Pan too much, so let's maybe put a pin in that. If someone wants to hear your thoughts, maybe we could do that as a Patreon exclusive.
I would just, to tease that, say that my thoughts on that are that why this is relevant to Hook is some of the psychological significance of Peter Pan as a mythology gets robbed when you don't make the main character a prepubescent girl. So when the main... when Jack is the main child from the real world, some of that psychosexual symbolic subtext gets flattened out and robbed.
Basically. I can see that.
All right.
All right.
Anything else to add or say about Hook?
No. Well, is it good? Is it seriously good? So what do you think? Is it good?
I think it's good. I think it's not as good as I remember it being.
Yep.
But in some ways, Hook stands in my mind in the same sort of category as The Princess Bride. Like, it's a swashbuckling, nostalgic, funny movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's not as good as The Princess Bride. I already knew it wasn't as good as The Princess Bride, but I think it doesn't hold up as much as The Princess Bride does, which we also watched fairly recently. So it's pretty good, but not as good as I remember it being.
I'll definitely agree with that. It's got nostalgic goodness, but I don't think it's... and I think it's fun and good, but not... not as good as I remember.
I like what you said about watching it with our kids and not thinking, like, I'm showing them something important that they've really got to understand. Like, some of the movies we watch, I'm like... we're sitting down and you're watching this movie because this is a movie you need to understand and like.
Yeah.
You don't need to like. You need to understand where this movie is coming from if you're going to be a culturally educated person.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Star Wars is a great example of that.
Mm-hmm.
I think Hook is not.
Hook is not. No.
Is this movie seriously good?
No.
No, because...
for all the reasons we said,
yeah.
It is not seriously good. It is...
it has some saving
moments. It's seriously medium, maybe, because it does have some saving things that are better than other movies, but
it's basically overall, seriously good in most ways except when it comes to gender and sex.
Gender.
Gender specifically.
Yeah.
But the things about gender are so seriously bad that it's seriously bad in terms of gender.
Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right.
All right, so that sums us up on Hook. I hope that we got our we got our hooks into you.
No.
I can do puns too.
So you can find us on Twitter at WTSCast.
Mm-hmm.
You can email us if you have things to say or ask or suggest of another movie to watch or anything like that at waytooseriouslycast@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm. If you want to support us, leave a rating or review on iTunes. That helps other people find us and helps get the word out about our great podcast. 5 stars or higher are the best kind of rating. And to support us even more directly on Patreon, patreon.com/clockworkscast. And you can pitch in $1 a month or whatever you can afford to just help us out to make us our lives a little easier to record these podcasts.
And there's some fancy
extra goodies,
extra things, and you'll have all the good rewards that money can buy.
Yep. Absolutely. Some good rewards that money can buy.
All right.
Okay,
so
that's about it.
That's it for us.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye. Goodbye. We're going to sign out.